This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roker Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav. Back after Sunderland's 2-1 away defeat at Rotherham United. Joining me to dissect the game, to talk about our game with Coventry at the weekend, to talk about some good news which came out of the club, is Chris.
And I had almost forgotten the score until you said it again when you read it out loud. I was like, we're going to talk about that.
It's a particularly sore one for us, isn't it, me and you? Because you live in the area and I'm living with a Rotherham fan, so yeah, it wasn't a nice one to take, but yeah, she had to get that one in when she woke up this morning and seen the score. But yeah, we lost 2-1. We probably gave our worst performance of the season, I would say.
Yeah, I can't think of. I was just looking at the fixtures. I can't think of one. The only thing that springs to mind is our first half at Swansea, but is it
Cardiff at home was the other
maybe,
one.
Maybe, yeah, that was a where was we were pretty poor. Bad. Yeah, that was pretty awful.
I mean, at half time, I said that's the worst half of football we've played. First half we've played all season. It was shocking, and I mean we're not going to sit here and stick the knife into the players and what have you, because I think they do have, you know, enough credit in the bank. We can let certain things slide. I think it was a very tired performance, but it's not typical of us at the minute. I wouldn't say we haven't. I mean, I do feel like this has been coming though. I do feel like we've had a couple of performances where I felt like the tiredness is going to come to a head and we're going to struggle in a physical game. And I think this was it.
I'm going to disagree with you slightly because you said kind of against the grain there, but I think it's been coming. I think the results to a certain extent since the Middlesbrough game has kind of masked a little bit of our failing since that game, I think. Other than, obviously, because Middlesbrough, we were fantastic. Fulham, we were fantastic away. Should have beat them. But since then, Millwall was a gritty performance. We didn't really get going with the ball on the floor. Reading, we had to grind that out. I mean, I know Reading did their thing, but we weren't particularly great in that game. It was more of a slog than it should have been. QPR, I said at the time, I thought we started that game poorly. I thought QPR were the better team early on, and we had to grow into that game. Bristol City, we talked about at the weekend where it was an awful first half, and we had to grow into that game as well. And that first half against Rotherham was an end product of those performances kind of gradually getting like that, where that first half was just, I mean, what was it? Alex Pritchard, I think, had the only shot on target where he curled that one in that was going into the top corner. But I don't think long term this is necessarily a bad thing, because like I said, since Middlesbrough we seem to be kind of limping along and getting the results and, you know, doing just enough to get like a draw against Bristol City, you know, getting those late goals against QPR, you know, getting that goal against Reading. It was kind of just doing enough, and maybe this defeat at Rotherham might get us to kind of reset and kind of refocus on things.
Yeah, and I think it's probably, you know, a good time for Mowbray to take stock. And I actually think there was a little bit of arrogance in the team selection in that we thought we were just going to go there and play football and outdo them. And, you know, anybody who watched us play Rotherham last season knows that it isn't an easy game. You can't just turn up there and boss it, because that's pretty much the position we were in last year. I think we were flying before we went to Rotherham, playing some gorgeous football under Lee Johnson, and they absolutely battered us. And I was at that game. Pitch was tight. They know what they're good at and they play to their strengths. And I know it's a different manager. I know they've lost a lot of players, but that ethos is still there, particularly in midfield. They wanted it. They just wanted the ball. They wanted to win the battles. They were probably really pretty glad that we went with the team we did, because I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting to see Dan Neil and Edouard Michaud start. I just felt like it was maybe the wrong game for the pair of them, and that we should maybe do what we did at QPR and put Luke O'Neill in and try and ensure that we're protected physically. You know, he decided to drop Trey Hume and play Luke O'Neill at right back. Also decided to drop Patrick Roberts. And I think he explained after the game that was because he felt he'd played a lot of football. But there are other attackers who look a lot more tired than he does at the minute. So that was a strange one. You know, I don't often pick at his team selection and stuff, but I think he got this one pretty wrong. And then he definitely waited too long to address it. I mean, we were 2-0 down by the time we actually properly addressed it. And I think at half time, I know it's not his way. I know Mowbray we've been in this position before with him where we go in at half time and we're like, he needs to make changes. And he always gives those players the sort of 10, 15 minutes they need to take the instruction on board and improve. And it has worked for us, to be fair. But I think at half time, I was sat there thinking, he has to make changes here before this gets away from us. And it did in the end. It got away from us. I know, you know, the last half an hour or so was much improved and we played some good stuff and we created chances and we even got a goal back. But it was too little too late. I think we could have addressed it a lot earlier. And I'm not just talking about before the game where, you know, we knew we were going to be in a physical battle. We didn't pick a physical team. Half time was the chance to change things slightly and he just didn't do it. So I do think this one might be on the manager this time around, and I think we could have we've sold ourselves short, and there was a bit of arrogance there with the team selection.
Well, I might end up contradicting myself here, but I mean, just kind of going back to when we talked last, we were talking about what team selection he might play, and to be fair, in the conversation we had, we were saying, you know, Rotherham Wood is a kind of almost a perfect opportunity to get some minutes into players' legs and give people a rest.
Yeah, and just rested the wrong players.
Well, it did to a certain extent, but I'm not completely sure how much it was about personnel and how much it was about shape, because I can't remember which game it was. It might have been the QPR one early on. I can't remember. It might have been a different game, but where he tried this, he's got this system where he had Gellert and Clark up front, and then
that was QPR,
and then he pulled Pritchard over to the left hand side, and he had Ahmad on the right. And then he had Michu and Neil as almost like a 4-4-2. And the problem is, out of possession, when Rotherham were out of possession, Rathbone dropped in. So he was alongside Fosu and Coventry in the middle. And then they had a three in midfield. So they just out-muscled and outnumbered Michu and Dan Neil. And look, don't get us wrong, I thought Michu and Dan Neil were just poor anyway. I mean, even the 10-yard pass was evading them at Rotherham. I mean, they didn't get the simple things right. But I don't think they were backed by just saying, right, well, you two would just kind of fend for yourselves against their three when Rathbone dropped in. But I do think, you know, and like I said, I think it was more the system. But with that personnel, you look at that team, and I don't necessarily disagree with anything you're saying about those two in the middle, but that team should be beaten, Rotherham, full stop.
I don't know if it's as easy as that, though. I don't know.
But they didn't get the ball down on the deck. They didn't play the football. No. They didn't get the 10-yard passes right. They didn't do the simple things right.
No, yeah, that's bang on. No, we didn't. We didn't. Even the stuff we should have got right, we didn't. And yeah, I think there's a lot being made about how tired we look at the minute, but not competing physically. I mean, that's not just down to tiredness. Rotherham have played just as many games as we have, and every team's going through the same thing. You could argue their squad is a lot worse than ours, and they coped fine, you know. And I do think tiredness does play its part, and I think, I go back to what I just said before, I think he probably rested the wrong players. Like, I actually think if he picks Luke O'Neill in midfield instead of Neil or Michu, and perhaps even starts Ekwa in this game, just because they give us that physical barrier that the other two can't give us because it's just not their game, it might be a different game. You're right, though, about the outnumbered thing. I think the fact they had three in the middle was a big difference because we were going back to front and missing out the midfield. And then when the ball was there to be won in the middle, there was just this huge gap between attack and defence. There was, it wasn't working. It was quite clear from early in the game it wasn't working. I don't know whether he maybe felt that we would eventually get a spell and have control of the ball and that it would work out, because he has got a lot of trust in them two players. And I'm not pinning the blame for the performance on them too. I just think they were probably let down by the team selection a little bit, the tactics. It was a bit of everything, wasn't it? It wasn't one single thing. Nothing really went right. It didn't mesh correctly. And it was a battle that we lost. It wasn't we weren't out-footballed or outplayed by Rotherham. I actually don't think we battled well enough. And I think, by the time we did, and by the time we did have our spell, and by the time Rotherham, that ingrained pessimism they've probably got about the performances at the minute because they're doing so poorly, once they were like, oh God, Sunderland are getting on top of us a little bit, I just think it was a bit too late by that point. I don't like this thing of sort of waiting until a game's out of reach before you decide you're going to turn it on. I've never liked that. And that's really what we did.
I mean, like you said, we'll never know about the personnel now, whether putting Ekwa in would have, talked about that battle. I mean, look, full stop, Rotherham wanted that more than we did. I mean, that was just, that was the bottom line, which we shouldn't really be saying. I mean, we should be matching them on that front. But regardless of the personnel, we should want it as much as they do. But, I mean, talking about, again, that personnel, I mean, I was crying out for us to kind of match them up early on because it was obvious we were getting outnumbered early on. And I was crying out saying, well, Pritchard just looked a bit lost on the left-hand side. If he played behind Gellert and then we moved Clark over to the left, and then Pritchard could have done the same thing as Rathbone and dropped in when we were out of possession as kind of that third central midfielder. And I don't understand why he kind of stuck to this almost kind of 4-4-2 as it was, even when we were out of possession. Nobody dropped in and helped them. And talking about the battle, winning the battle, I mean, yes, okay, we did get out-battled, whether it was they wanted it more or whether it was the system. But my problem with Neil and Dan Neil and Michu was, even when we got possession of the football, they didn't do their thing. They didn't keep possession. They didn't do what they're good at. And you can say all day that Michu and Dan Neil might get out-battled by players, which is absolutely right. That's going to happen this season, especially against teams like this. But their thing is keeping possession of the ball and being good on the ball and picking passes out. And they didn't do that right. So who's to say that, we might say, oh, they got the team selection wrong. But at the same time, like Dan Neil and Michu didn't kind of do what they're good at very well. So we'll never know, if they had a performance which we're used to seeing this season, whether we actually would have gotten a result.
Yeah, and it's all right sitting here saying it now in hindsight, the team selection was wrong and all the rest of it. But I mean, I think when you think back to that QPR game, 09 was so good in that game, and it wasn't for his sort of technical ability, it was more for his all-round performance. It was just a battle in midfield performance. And I felt this was going to be more like that type of game than the game at the weekend, which obviously we drew, but it was a very different game. And even then, 09, I think he played right back, didn't he? He put a great ball in at one point, which I think Gellert was offside. Done it again, which we scored from, and then was moved to left centre-half. He never actually played centre-mid, even though we could have probably done with him after that hour mark in there just to give us something. But maybe I'm not seeing the bigger picture here. Maybe Mowbray just doesn't particularly rate him there. I don't know. It just seems a bit strange after the QPR game that he hasn't actually played there.
Yeah, and I don't disagree that we needed more bite in there. I think my frustration comes from the fact that we didn't see performances from the players that were on the pitch and the positions that they were given, which was just frustrating all night.
Yeah, well, we had a number of chances, didn't we? If you think, you mentioned the Pritchard one, which was he crafted that himself, really, didn't he? Got to be fair to him. But it was a great save from the goalkeeper. Ballard missed an absolutely glorious header, which, to me, I'm expecting him to bury. You know, he's got a great leap on him. He's got all of the room to do what he wants to do. Heads that wide. And then their goal, for the first one, which we might as well talk about, from Ollie Rathbone, poor, isn't it? You know, just all around from us.
I mean, that goal was a perfect example of how we played the all night. Rathbone almost, he was kind of just walking up to the edge of the box. Three players around him. I think there was 09, was it 09, Danny Bart and someone else? I think there was three of them.
Mishu was the main culprit in it for me. He sort of jogs towards it, doesn't actually make any attempt.
All three of them were, and they just gave him the room to swing his foot at it. And I mean, it was a perfect example of how we were all night. I mean, we weren't on Rotherham, we weren't on top of them when they had the ball. They just had time to do. They had so much time on the ball when they were knocking it about. I mean, at times Rotherham looked like they played nice football, but. To be fair, when people give you 15 yards and nobody's pressing you, I mean, it's going to be easy to play football, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, the second one was just really poor, wasn't it? I think it starts with Dan Neil slipping on his arse. Not releasing the ball early enough, really. He has chances to pass it, tries to pivot on the ball and slips over, which allows them the run. Totally catches us on the hop because I think our two centre-halves had split waiting for a pass. And obviously, because they'd done that, it opened up all that room for Rotherham to break against us. Ferguson, when he's down the left-hand side, I think if I remember rightly, Luke O'Neill's trying his best to sprint back to cover the space, but it's too little too late. And another long-range goal, which beats Patterson. I can't really blame Patterson for either goal. I think, you know, although there were long-range strikes, I think he's been let down by the players ahead of him. But again, another daft error, really, you know, a very needless goal. To be honest, I said I wasn't going to pick anybody out, but it's not the first time Dan Neil's done that this season, and I was really hoping we'd seen the last of that. I know he's a young lad who is going to make mistakes, but you've got to learn from your mistakes too, and that isn't the first time he's done that.
For me, it was a bit of a tired effort to get back and to get the ball back from Dan Neil. Anybody can slip over, but like he just looked tired once he'd slipped over. And when they started charging forward with the ball, Dan Neil seemed to be losing ground on them, even though kind of they were running with the ball and Dan Neil wasn't. And he just looked tired at that point. And I know we've talked about that, keep putting Dan Neil in because he's going to learn so much, keep him in. But I do wonder if now's the time just to say, look, have a week off and have 7 days to rest up. And I know we've got a week after the Coventry game, so...
Yeah.
I suspect he's going to be in the 11 against Coventry, but like I said, looking at that tired effort to get back at that point in the game, you do wonder if it's time to bring him out.
Yeah, and we did respond, to be fair. 5 minutes later, we got our goal. Like I said, not long before the goal, we had one chalked off. It was 09, putting the ball in. Another great effort from him. I thought Ahmad was poor all night, but he has a role to play in the goal. Plays it to 09, who puts a peach of a ball in, really. And I know it's difficult, isn't it, to just sort of swing the ball in and expect someone to be there. So it's a good run from Gelhardt to get his head on the end of it. He has to bury it, to be fair, but his movement to get on the end of the ball is really good. And yeah, we got one back, and it was, like I say, in the end, it ended up being too late. But we did give ourselves a chance at that point. We had half an hour to get back in the game, which we didn't do. But I come back to the thing you just said about tiredness and Neil not really looking up with, because he was maybe a little bit, you know, tired by that point in the game. I don't know. That was what plagued us in the final 30 minutes of the game, because you had Patrick Roberts doing everything he could to try and get us back into the game. I thought he was superb. But then there was some very tired bodies around him, and it didn't matter what changes Mowbray made. It didn't work, really, you know. It didn't work. And, just... A tough night, I think.
It's worth talking about Ahmad at this point, because you mentioned him there, and we talked after the Bristol City game, and I did say then that I was a little bit surprised, because I felt like Ahmad needed a break. He just looks like he needs a rest. It's actually been a while since we've kind of, I know he hits such heights. You know, he's such a fantastic player, that it's going to be effort for anyone to kind of keep that consistency there, especially, you know, when he's come here to get first team games and almost learn his trade a little bit. So to hit the heights he did and to stay there, I mean, it, like I said, it's difficult for anyone, especially for how old is he? I think he's only 20. So, I mean, God, he's still young, but he's dropped off, and I don't think there's any denying it. And I think Tony Mowbray's got a bit of a dilemma now because what do you do? What do you do with such a fantastic, what do you do with such a fantastic player who you want in there, you want on the ball, but at the minute he's not producing? So do you just keep saying, right, you're going to find it, it's going to click again at some point? Or do you say, no, come on, let's have a week off, let's come out completely, have a break, and then you'll be refreshed for the last time? I mean, it's a massive decision for Tony Mowbray because at times he was, I don't know, he was just wandering a bit. Ahmad, he kind of looked lost when he got the ball. He didn't quite know whether to take them on down the line. I mean, he seemed lost with Patrick Roberts, or without Patrick Roberts, I should say. So, yeah, it's a bit of a conundrum for Mowbray because you want Ahmad on the pitch and you want him doing his thing. But when he's not on it, he's been really off the last few games. So it'll be interesting to see what Mowbray does.
Yeah, Bomber mentioned it in his post-match talking points piece on the website. You know, he asked, which is the lesser of two evils? Is it resting him and making the team weaker, or persevering with Ahmad who's playing at a fraction of his ability? It's, I think I know what Mowbray will do. He'll persist with him because he's done that with other players when they've had tough games.
But that's the policy. That's the policy of the club now. It's like, these lads are young, but we're not punishing them for bad form. We're not. But it's how do you manage them? Because they have to be managed. I mean, even go, you look at Alex Ferguson back in the day with the young players. He didn't just kind of flog them and play them every game. He put them in, took them out for a few games, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, but when you've got a squad full of them, you know, how do you kind of rotate them?
The other thing is as well, I've mentioned this to somebody today, and I've been thinking about it today, is, you know, does he really trust the other players in reserve yet? Because if you do, then it's a lot easier to take them out, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're looking at Isaac Lee Hadji, who's not really been here very long, who, you know, Mowbray made a point of saying he doesn't speak good English yet, so sort of his communication on the pitch is going to be difficult. Dewey, on the other side of the pitch, has been here since the summer, but isn't starting games. He's bringing them off the bench when we need a goal and stuff, but he isn't starting games. And you're looking at it and you think, does he trust them enough or not? Because if he did, then I would be sat here going, well, we can take Ahmad out because we've got options. We can bring in Bennett, we can bring in Lee Hadji and maybe try something different against Coventry. But I actually think that's the conundrum that's facing Tony Mowbray, is he knows he probably should take Ahmad out, but it's a case of, are we worse off by bringing in someone else who I don't really trust yet? Yeah. And that's the conundrum he's facing.
And he hinted at it, I think it was a good couple of weeks ago, he was talking about it, and he was asked a question about rotation. He wanted these players to learn what their jobs are defensively. And he said, these players, you know, they need to learn the kind of the structure and where they need to be, what positionally they need to be, kind of whether the wide players are helping their fullback out or whether people drop in or where do they, you know. So I think that, I think you're exactly right that there's an element of trust, but it's more that maybe, like you said, the communication problems, if they're trying to teach them, this is how we play, this is how we set up, this is where you should be. Because I think he said, I can't put these players in until they're up to speed with all of that.
Yeah. Might as well end this bit on Rotherham with a couple of positives. And like I said before, Gelhardt got a goal, which gets him off and running. I mean, he missed a few as well, but he got the important thing was that he got one of them. And also, Patrick Roberts' performance, he was superb, I felt. I came away from that game and my abiding thought and feeling about him was that we actually don't understand how important he is until he's not in the team, because everything ticks when he's on the pitch. He makes everything else work. I mean, you mentioned Ahmad before. He still wasn't great when Roberts was on the pitch, but you just see everybody else pick their levels up when he's there because he's so good. And I think we've maybe worked out now that he has to play when he's fit, because he's absolutely fantastic. He's got everything apart from probably the final product, but is the sort of overall if the team was a machine, he is right at the centre of it, making everything work.
Yeah, and what impressed me about Roberts when he came on as well, more, you know, we always talk about Roberts, and he was great on the ball. You know, he looks, you know, he's always got that touch about him, but his work rate when he came on, and it was head and shoulders above any other Sunderland player on the pitch. He just seemed to be, he wanted to get back and win the ball on the edge of our own area. Then he wanted to kind of run with it. Then he wanted to be, he was playing 1-2s to get us up the pitch. And it just showed actually how that was lacking in the rest of the team all night, that when Roberts came on and his work rate was like that, you could see a massive difference between him and everyone else. Just on Gellard, by the way, because he did miss a few chances, and I think it's fantastic that he got his goal. But I do think the signs there that I think there's a player there, and I think some of his troubles to start with in the last few games haven't been helped by the form of the rest of the team. We seem to have kind of dipped a little bit in terms of our chance creation and how good those chances are. And I think Gellard's come in just as we've had that dip, and I don't think that's helped him. But I do think there's a couple of times, you know, that what he did with Clark at the weekend, you know, with that holding the ball up, getting involved, playing that ball wide, and then scoring the goal. I think there's a player there. I'm just hoping, like I said, he gets a run of games and the players around him pick it up, because I think he could end up impressing us before the end of the season.
I hope so, yeah. I really hope so. I'm just, some of the missed chances and stuff have been concerning, but I'm not going to judge him too early on that. I think you've got to remember he's a young kid. He's probably been thrust into this sooner than he expected and in a more prominent role, and hadn't played a great deal of football before he came here. So certainly won't be sort of marking what I think about him right now definitively. I think he's, you know, we should stay with an open mind, and hopefully he gets a lot of goals between now and the end of the season. I think he's got the desire to do it, which is a big part of it with some forwards, isn't it? You know, some forwards, they've got all the ability in the world, but they can't be arsed. Or you've got the other side of things where they're very talented, but they haven't got the application. And I think his application's definitely there. And there's obviously talent, or he wouldn't be playing for a Premier League team. So let's just hope hopefully he kicks on from here, because I think he needed that goal. I think it's been evident that he's been trying maybe a little bit too hard to get the goal, and that's maybe affected some of his performances, and that's natural, really. You know, when a striker's confident, the ball could hit them anywhere and it'll go in the back of the net. And when you're not confident, or you haven't been able to gather any momentum as a player, then you just don't have that feeling about you. And let's hope that goal does that for him. Mm-hmm. Which I guess segues us nicely into the conversation about the game at the weekend, Coventry away, another tough one, 12:30 kickoff on Saturday, live on Sky, against a team who always give us a good game. To be honest, I don't remember the last time we beat Coventry away.
I can tell you.
Go on then.
1985, last time we beat them away. We haven't won at Coventry in the last 10 games. Goes back to 1985. John Moore scored the winner at Highfield Road. So it's been a while.
There you go. Well, every time I've ever been to Coventry, I've seen us get beat. I remember going there when, I think it was still at Highfield Road, when Peter Reid was the manager. And I think it was the opening game of the season. They beat us 3-2. I remember being there. Haven't had happy memories of Coventry down the years. But let's hope we change things this weekend. We've got great opportunity to get back to winning ways. They've had a couple of wins, I think, in the last couple of games. So it's not going to be easy. You know, we saw at the start, I think we played them on the opening day, didn't we? And they snatched that point right at the death. They've got, in my eyes, with Ross Stewart on the sidelines now, they've got the best striker in the league, and Victor Gutierrez, I think that's how you pronounce it. But he's other than Ross Stewart, in my eyes, the best striker in the league. He's just got everything. He's powerful, he's big, he scores goals, he carries himself like a top player. I'm just reading here now, he's been directly involved in 18 league goals this season with 14 goals and 4 assists. So that's obviously the danger man, isn't it? he's the one to watch. I think I'm just, again, just reading here, he's scored twice as many as any other Coventry player this season and has had a hand in 5 goals in his last 6 appearances. So, yeah, it's about Danny Ballard and Danny Bath handling him, I guess, this game, isn't it?
It is. And I don't know how significant the fact that Coventry didn't play in midweek is going to be. big discussion at the minute about how tired we are, and you know we've touched on it. Coventry didn't play during the week, so they've had a break of kind of 7 days between games. So I don't know how significant that's going to be. Like you said, they've won the last two. At home, they've got the seventh best home record. It's basically their home record that's been keeping them where they are in the league. So that their home record's been keeping them in touch. Seventh best in the league. There's only four sides conceded less at home than Coventry this season. So they've got a really good defensive record. They've only been beaten once at home in the last 11 games. So it's their home form, basically, that they rely on to keep them in touch with the playoffs. Because I think they've got something like the sixth worst away record in the division. So the crap away from home, and at home, that's where they pick up the points. So this is a really tough one. We said, you know, after the Bristol City game, and it was funny because we were talking about picking the Rotherham team based on Coventry being a tough game, but not taking our eye off the Rotherham game. But the fact that we've done that, it puts more pressure on us getting a result at Coventry now, because now it's, you know, if we don't get a result at Coventry, you know, we're looking at three without a win, and then, you know, kind of we don't want kind of heads to start dropping, because we want to look at the bigger picture, where it's, you know, first away defeat at Rotherham since October, I think it was, when we got beat off Blackburn. So, you know, we've got to look at the big picture and say, well, we've been on this good run, and it's, you know, even though we had that bad result against Rotherham and that last minute blow against Bristol City, we've been fantastic away from home, and there's no reason why we can't go to Coventry and get a result. It is a tough game. They've got a cracking record. They're a good team. They've got threat going forward. But if we can step it back up and we can get those players firing again, there's no reason why we can't get a result.
No. I'm pretty confident that we'll go there and we won't be as bad as we were at Rotherham, because I think, you know,
it's a challenge.
Well, yeah, I think you've just got to expect that might have been a bit of a rocket up their arses, and that we maybe won't be as lackadaisical with the team selection and the tactics and stuff, because obviously Coventry are a better team than Rotherham, and we didn't turn up at Rotherham. So that's the important thing for me. We have to turn up, we have to compete. I think people would be happy with a point if it's a well-fought, you know, we play good football, we work hard for the point, then I think people would be happy with that. That's the important thing. I don't want us to come away from this and people be like, oh God, we're on a bit of a downer here, and, you know, a continuation of what we saw at Rotherham, really. People sort of talking about the same things, players looking tired, players looking jaded, not having the options, things not coming off. And at this point, we've been really, really lucky to be able to say we've played some fantastic football this season. You know, we're in a good position with the playoffs, and a win would still be fantastic for us, because it would push us into the playoffs, hopefully again, in the playoff spots. So, you know, there's still plenty to be positive about. I know we've talked a lot about things that pissed us off after Rotherham and things like that, but I think we've only once this season lost back-to-back games, haven't we? Which was Blackburn and Burnley, which shows we do tend to respond fairly well to adversity, and let's just hope we do it again. I mean, probably put the mockers on us. I say this every time I make a big statement like that, but I'm hoping that we give a good account of ourselves. That's all I'm bothered about.
Yeah, and a defeat isn't the end of the world. And I think as you've said, we've got a little bit more griping to do, just because the performance was so bad, really, compared to what we've seen this season. I mean, I'll take you back to kind of Millwall away, Sheffield United away, you know, where we didn't win the game. You know, the fans were, you know, giving the players a standing ovation after the game, because we knew that they'd put in the graft, and it was, you know, they'd put in a real shift for us, and they actually played well. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think we kind of respond even if the team gets beat, as long as they put in a shift and put in a performance. But like you've touched on that, a defeat, it's not the end of the world. And I think, like I said at the beginning, it could act as a good thing in the long term if we learn from it. And actually, if it kind of gets us out of this just doing enough to get results, because I think that's what we were doing until Rotherham. But yeah, if Mowbray kind of plays this well, you know, does the psychology thing, then, you know, hopefully we can step it back up and go on another run.
What's your gut feeling about the game then? How do you see it playing out and what have you?
I'll be happy with us getting a point. I think Coventry are going to smell blood. I think that if they had scouts at the Rotherham game, they'll have a game plan. If they had someone watching the game, then they'll know how to get at us. But I don't think Tony Mowbray is going to set up with that. He's not going to go to Coventry and set up with that almost 4-4-2. He will not do that. I'm hoping he's learned from the opening period against QPR and this game against Rotherham that he will not do that against a side like Coventry, because, you know, QPR was struggling, Rotherham was struggling, and I think he kind of played that card. I don't think he'll do that at Coventry. I think you'll see someone playing just behind Gellert who drops into midfield and helps them out and makes us that little bit tighter.
Yeah, well, as has become a mini theme of podcasts recently, we might as well finish off with some questions from Twitter, because if I don't do it now, I'll forget. So Michael Bowers has asked us thoughts on the state of the officials. How do we tackle the frustrating lack of consistency? This probably touches on another question we got from Joe Lewins, who has asked us our thoughts on the disallowed Elise goal, which we haven't actually talked about yet. But yeah, there was obviously that chance at the end of the game where their goalkeeper comes careering out from his goal, clatters into Luke O'Neill's elbow, which I don't think O'Neill knows anything about. The loose ball's then put in the back of the net by Adji Elise and we don't get the goal. Replays have shown that it was probably an unfair decision. The referee should have gave the goal. And that's the frustrating thing, isn't it, really? We there is no consistency. I know you've talked a lot about this throughout the season, about the sort of guidance that refs are getting now. And a big thing I've sort of talked about when it comes to referees is that, you know, particularly this guy, he's a Premier League ref who works under very different rules than the Championship refs do, because they have a lot more help. They have VAR, they have, you know, a lot more help than these guys do. And we've seen this a few times this season when Premier League refs drop down to referee us. They always seem to have stinkers when they take our games. And I do wonder how much that has to do with the fact that Premier League games are ref very differently to Championship games. So what do you think of it all?
Yeah, well, I think we've talked about this before, that I think refs are having a really difficult time getting consistency between themselves with this rule changes this year, where they kind of followed the World Cup, where they're kind of letting the game go for, and I think us as fans are getting frustrated with the lack of consistency, but also we are getting used to the rules ourselves, because last season we would have seen the whistle go and we would have seen free kicks given for things that aren't free kicks this year. But again, you wouldn't mind so much if they were given the same decisions from minute to minute during the game. The problem is there's a tackle going in that they're not given a free kick for, and then exactly the same tackle goes in 5 minutes later, and then they do the opposite. So it was going to take time this season, but the refs are finding it hard. Fans are going to find it hard accepting it. And yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think I can't remember how the question was worded, how we're going to deal with it. Well, I think we've lived with crap referees for so many years now that I think you're just going to accept that. Basically, when there's a good referee, we've got to try and celebrate it, because they're few and far between, to be honest. I can't remember the last one. But yeah, just quickly on the penalty.
The penalty?
The penalty shout. Oh, sorry. The foul on the keeper. Aye, that one. The disallowed goal. It was in the penalty box. I think that's where I was coming from.
There we go.
it was purely given because it looked bad. The goalkeeper's head made contact with O'Neill's elbow, and the referee just thought, yeah, foul. He flung himself, and it was just a kind of instinct thing. When a keeper goes down, referees like to put their whistle to their mouths, and that's how it turned out.
Yeah. Shane Hagan asks, Stuart Roberts is the best player we have by a country mile. Agree or disagree? I think I briefly sort of touched on this before when I said, you know, he makes the whole team tick. But the best player we have by a country mile, do you think?
Oh, well, come on. I mean, I was a crap centre-half, but I was a centre-half. So, I mean, you can't compare Dan Ballard with Patrick Roberts, can you, in terms of product? Because, you know, Dan Ballard, Danny Bart, they do their jobs probably just as good as Roberts, but they don't look quite as spectacular doing it, do they? So, you know, you could argue, you know, who's our, if you're talking about who's our most technically gifted player, you know, it's going to be Roberts and Ahmad, isn't it? If you're talking about, you know, most effective, then, yeah. I don't know, you could toss a coin between quite a few of them.
Yeah, well, yeah, I actually think that in terms of pure talent, and we don't own Ahmad, so I don't know if he counts in this discussion, maybe he does, but I think in terms of pure talent, I can't think really of anybody who's on his level. But yeah, you're right. I mean, my concern with Roberts has been that for all the talent he's got and the fantastic all-round game he's got, it's actually the end product that's lacking a little bit. He doesn't score enough. He doesn't assist enough. I think I seen that was his 50th game when he came on at Rotherham, and I think he's got 6 goals in 50 games, which isn't brilliant, is it? You know, and 2 of them were against Redden. 2 of them were in 1 game. So, you know, take that out of the equation, that's 49 games, 4 goals. It's not brilliant. But then you could say that this is the first time he's really been prominent in the team, the first time he's had a proper run of games apart from Rotherham, where he's had a proper run of games and been in the team every week. So I actually think there's still a lot of improvement to be done with Roberts. I think, you know, I think he's the type of player when he's really confident and feels important, he's unplayable. And we're verging on that at the minute. I don't think we're quite there. I think once he starts scoring goals, we will be there. But he's definitely right up there in the conversation of best player we've got. I mean, can't be many more better players than him at the minute. One of the other questions, let's go for this one from Josh Hutchinson, who asks, do you think the tiredness excuse is a cop-out or valid? Everyone else has played the same number of games. Again, something I touched on in the chat there about the Rotherham game, but is it a cop-out or is it a valid excuse?
Well, you know what kind of I found a little bit frustrating? I don't know if you watched Tony Mowbray's pre-match press conference, but I think right at the beginning of the press conference, he was asked about, is it good that we've got a game, you know, a few days after the Bristol City game where the last minute goal went in and it was a big blow, and, you know, is it good that we've got a game a few days later that we can put it right? And his immediate response was to say, no, I'd prefer not to have a game. And he says, you know, that the players kind of need a rest. He says, and then he started to talk about, well, we've got players playing on the limit at the minute and I'm trying to manage the players and all this. And to me, I just thought, just to hear Mowbray say, I don't want a game in midweek, but we're going to have to go there and we're going to have to try our best. It just, and I love Tony Mowbray. I think he's fantastic. I love the guy. But when I heard that, I just thought, if you're a player listening to that, are you not thinking, like, you know, that your manager doesn't want us to play during the week because he thinks we're all knackered?
He is a bit glass half empty at times, isn't he, when he talks. Like, one of the things that always stands out to me with him is he always begins an answer to a question by bigging up the opposition. Like, he'll tell you how great they are before he talks about his own players. I don't know why he does it. It's obviously just, it's the way he is. But you're totally right. I think, you know, if he's saying it in front of the press, he's saying it in front of the players. They're obviously talking about how tired they are. It's dominating every conversation. But as Josh says there, you know, everyone else has played the same number of games. And, you know, are all the managers making excuses for being tired? We've still got a better squad than Rotherham and they outbattled us. So I'm probably more erring towards it's a bit of a cop-out, actually. You know, I do agree that we do look tired, but it's a game of football. To me, I'm very old school and I think if you can't run around for 90 minutes when that's your job to be fit enough to do it, then there's something wrong there. I know players do play with injuries. Not every player is the same. You know, you have players who'll play through any issue like Luke O'Neill, and then you've got the other end of the scale, you know, your Daniel Sturridges, who apparently would never play if he didn't feel 100% fit and all the rest of it. You know, every player's different. You've got to go on a player-by-player basis. And, I just think it is a bit of a cop-out to sit here and say, oh, well, that was they're tired.
Yeah.
So is every other player in the league, and they just get on with their job, don't they?
I completely agree. And the other thing is, I mean, if you kind of list out our squad, I mean, obviously, apart from Gallardo, we have got options, you know, in other areas of the pitch, I mean, to kind of bring players out. And is it, as you asked the question earlier on, Tony Mowbray seems reluctant to use that squad. So if they're that tired, you know, that kind of bring them out, use some of those other players. You know, we've got them because we trust them. Look at the likes of Hume, the likes of, you know, Michu, you know, that young lads who were waiting in the wings for so long, then got the chance and took it. So, you know, do you think, you know, if you give Barr a couple of games, will he kind of take that chance? Even Bennett, I mean, start him from a game, is he going to take that chance? I mean, or Equa, you know, that we talked about earlier on. So if they're that knackered, use the squad.
Yeah. But,
you know, if they're that knackered now, we've still got, what, how many games? 15 games left, something like that.
Mm.
So I'm hoping they're not.
Last thing to quickly touch on, Corey Evans has signed a new contract. He's signed a one-year deal. It was due to expire in the summer. There's a further option of another year there. So, you know, if we want to keep him an extra year, we can. So he's here till at least the summer of 2024. Corey Evans, 32-year-old, played 64 games for us since he joined, but is currently sat out on the sidelines having suffered an ACL injury, which has been a season ender. One point in time was a career ender, you know, it's a very serious injury. What do you think about that then, given a new contract to a player who could feasibly, you know, perhaps not even start next season if he doesn't recover well enough? Is that a good move from us, or is it a sign of loyalty to a player who's been pretty committed with us? I mean, what do you think?
I think it works on a couple of levels. I think he's probably good around the place. He kind of showed it on the pitch first half of the season. You know, he was playing well. Just unlucky with that injury. But like I said, I think it works on that level. I mean, if you look at how we treated Jordan Willis, we did the right thing by him. And listening to Christian Speakman as well in the podcast he did with the club just after the transfer deadline ended, and he talked about Jordan Willis, and he said that's the way the club are now. They look after players and they want to be known to look after players, and Evans could well play a part next season, I think. But I think that's why it works on a few levels. Good to have around the place. You know, we're doing the right thing by him, by not just kind of, oh well, you're injured but you're getting released in the summer. We're not being kind of ruthless with players. So yeah, I think that it seems like the right thing to do on every level, really.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, I think Corey Evans has been fantastic for us since he came in. And I just think, you know, regardless of the fact he's injured, I think he's got enough change in the bank there to have earned at least another year with the club. And this is a team, let's not forget, who are very, very young and inexperienced. And we've already lost, you know, Bailey Wright's gone, probably won't be coming back to play for us. And we do need to have some continuity to be able to bring those players on a bit more even next year, regardless of what league we're in. You know, let's say we do get promoted somehow, you know, we're still going to need the older experienced lads around that team to just keep everything ticking over and working. And yeah, I just think it's a no-brainer. And what's nice is that the club have got this one done out the way while he's in the middle of his rehab, because it's at least a weight off his shoulders and he can look forward to next season rather than thinking, am I just going to get released and this is all a bit of a waste of time, and, you know, should I be planning for life away from Sunderland? They've went, no, you're staying, you're one of us, you know, we're keeping you about. So, yeah, just good on a professional and human level from Sunderland, I think, to get this deal tied up.
Yeah, nice to see. And just looking at, just reading Speakman's words as well, I think that the last words he used in the statement was he remains a huge influence around the team and in the club. So, you know, he's around the place. He's not kind of hiding away doing his rehab. He's involved and he's a voice in and around the place. So yeah, I think it's a good move.
Yeah, well, that's a nice positive end to an otherwise drab show. So if you've managed to stick with us this long, thank you very much. Thanks for joining us, Chris, as always.
No worries. Cheers, mate.
Cheers to the listeners. Cheers to everyone who sent us questions in. I did manage to shoehorn them in after originally forgetting that I'd asked for them. So thanks for listening to those as well. We will be back after the Coventry game, hopefully with something a bit more positive to talk about, because, yeah, we don't like talking about Sunderland losing. It's not nice. So if they could win, that would be lovely. And yeah, make sure you catch everything on rotereport.sbnation.com before and after the game. We'll be there every single day with that. So yeah, catch you later. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.